You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is Nightlight. It is great to have you here on this frigid evening, folks. Stay warm out there. Tomorrow, the high, at least in northeast Wisconsin, is going to be like negative 10. I don't even think I've ever experienced cold like this in my life. So bundle up, and I know it's going to be not much better around the state. So let's warm up this show right now, if we could, and talk about something that can help us escape and take us away. And that, of course, is great books and literature. And joining me now, it is my pleasure to welcome to Nightlight for the first time. She is the winner of the Alice Hoffman Prize for Fiction in 2023. And she joins us all the way from Ireland, author Molly Aitken. Hi, Molly.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Please tell me it's warmer there than it is here.
Way warmer. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I've...
I've never been as cold as you, I don't think, in my whole life.
I literally have a space heater right at my hip, and we'll get through this, though. And you don't equate Ireland with being a tropical place, but I'm sure it's much warmer where you are than where. Where are you, by the way?
I'm actually not in Ireland. I don't live in Ireland anymore. I grew up in West Cork, which I know your family is from, or part of your family.
Yeah.
But no, I live in the UK now. I live in England.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. And we did talk about that off the air a little bit. I have roots in Cork, and here's what I find interesting. Like, you look Irish. I asked you if I looked Irish, and you said, yeah, kind of. My mom is black Irish. She like gets tan. And you mentioned that most people think of Irish as gingers, but there are a lot of Irish people that get tan. I am not one of them, and it really makes me mad, to be honest with you.
I am so mad about it as well. I just turn into a lobster. It's very depressing.
Well, the good thing is you're a writer, and you probably spend a lot of time indoors in front of your computer, which I find just so great and romantic and outstanding. And I also have to say, before we get into some of your works, you said in your email, you were glad we told you it was live radio so you could stop yourself from cursing. Is that a chore for you? Or?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, in Ireland, we swear in every other sentence. So I'm holding myself back. Although I have to say, living in England, I've had to train myself not to curse.
Oh, a little more, so much anymore. A little more proper over there, huh?
Yeah, they're more proper than us, for sure.
Our question of the day is, how do you feel about your, like, do you let your kids swear? How do you feel about swearing? And I kind of, I'm the same way. Like, I was brought up in a house where we didn't really swear, but I do. I was a stand-up comic, and my kids, I didn't really want them swearing in the house, but my wife kind of let that cat out of the bag, and now my kids swear freely, and I have to accept it. So there you go. Were you able to swear when you were a kid?
No, absolutely not. Okay. But my parents did all the time. And I have a son, and my stance is that he can swear, but I do say, like, don't do this at school.
That's good. That's good advice.
I don't know if that's worked, though, to be honest.
You'll hear about it, I'm sure, if it doesn't.
Yeah, I'll be getting a letter.
Okay, so you've got these two books that are very well received. You write historical fiction. Tell us, for those of us who still read, and I struggle. I was an English major. I still want to read. I need some motivation, though. What can you tell me about Bright I Burn, your book that was released just about a year ago?
Yeah, so this is about the first woman ever accused of witchcraft in Ireland in 1324. And she was one of the first women who was ever accused of witchcraft formally. And her case was quite different to any other. And I'd heard about her as a kid growing up in school, and she was like presented as the type of woman us good Catholic girls should never become. And I was kind of afraid of her. But then as I grew up, I kind of started to think about her in a different way. I had a really weird experience as well. Like, I was telling my mom that I was thinking about writing about her, but I was afraid to do it because she's also famous for having killed her four husbands. And I was like, I don't know if I want to go there.
Yeah. She got a fourth husband. She killed the first three and found some sucker.
I know.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Well, part of what's really incredible about her is she was also a banker and like incredibly independently wealthy. Wow. So that's why they kept coming. You just left the money. But yeah, I said to my mom, I was like, I think I'm going to write about her. My mom was like, you should sit down and talk to her. And I had this sensation. I like did everything that you're supposed to do when you're like welcoming a ghost. I like lit a candle. I closed my eyes. I invited her into the room and I felt this presence leaning over my shoulder and I heard her whispering, are you afraid of me? And I was like, yes.
Wow.
Yes, I am. And then I had this sensation of her like walking to stand in front of me. And as she did, she turned into a child and she said, I'm afraid of myself too. And that was the moment where I was like, I think I can write about you.
Oh my gosh.
It was a very strange experience.
So when was that, Molly?
That was during the pandemic, which it was like a lockdown in the UK. So everyone was a bit crazy, including myself. So I think that might be part of the explanation. But I just went with it. And in a way, I feel like she wrote the book. She had this like, she's known in Ireland for being like a very negative, aggressive character. And she's really seen through the eyes of the church still within history. And the church did not like her. And I felt like she had this rage that she wanted to tell her story in her way.
Where do you go with that? After that experience where you were probably like, did I just see that or did I not? So you've got this great experience, a launch point. How do you create a book around that?
Yes, that's such a good question. So first off, I wrote it all by hand, which I don't think people do very often now. But that just felt right to me, given that she lived in the medieval period in Ireland. In a sense, I just felt that would connect me to her more. And possibly like, this might be something that you're familiar with because I know that you've written for screen, like that internal critic. I wanted to switch off my internal critic and just write and see what happened. So that's what I did. And I had like a weird ritual as well. I would like light a candle, invite her into the room. And then when I was done, I would like shoo her out the door because even though like she wasn't literally there, but I felt like I needed something to not kind of carry the weight of her around with me. And also I was newly married writing about this woman who supposedly kills her four husbands. So I was like, I don't think I need this energy all the time. Like I'll just have it while I'm writing. And in a way I felt like it wasn't wholly me who wrote it. It was her. And I'm a bit weird in that way. Like I do feel that about a lot of the characters that I write about. I write in the first person pretty often. And so I kind of give it over to the character to tell their story. I don't know if that's just like an easier way to do it so that it doesn't feel like so much pressure on myself. I'm like, they're handling it. They know what the story is. They'll do it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is really interesting. I'm always fascinated by how authors work and their process. And what, like for you, do you like a book like that? Did you write that quickly? Did you sit down and pull like a Jack Kerouac and not leave your typewriter, keyboard, whatever for like 3 days? Or did it take a year? How long does it typically take you?
It's so different depending on the book. This one was like weirdly specific as well because I wrote it in the first year of my son's life.
Okay.
So I was writing it like when he was napping and that meant that like every chapter was really short. He didn't nap for long. But now readers have said to me that like the pace of it is really fast because it's just these like really, really short chapters. So I think it's different for every book. That book, so that first big write-up of it took 1 year. But then I had to rewrite a lot of it because I was like slightly sleep deprived.
Yeah. Maybe that helped though on some level, right? Yeah, like it kind of opened your brain a little bit or stream of consciousness. I don't know.
Yeah. And I think I was just like, I was about to swear there. I cared less because yeah, I just didn't have time to care. So I just like wrote whatever and okay. Some of it was good and some of it wasn't, but it didn't really matter. That's
great. You can swear, by the way, because this is pre-recorded. So it just gives Conrad a little extra work. But if you got to let one fly, go for it. I've been there.
Thank you.
So are you a fan of, you write historical fiction. Who are your influences? Mm-hmm. Are you a fan of like Leon Uris?
I have no idea. I think the people, like the authors that we read, are probably very different because there's a lot of U.S. authors who aren't published here, and vice versa.
Okay.
The big ones for me are probably Hilary Mantel.
Okay.
Who you might have heard of? I'm not sure. She wrote Wolf Hall, okay. and won the Booker Prize twice, which is unusual.
Oh wow.
Another author I love who's getting a lot of attention right now, actually, is Maggie O'Farrell, who wrote Hamnet.
Oh, yeah, right, sure.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Would you love to see your books, like you've seen them performed or things you've written? What is that like? And would you ever like to see one of your books adapted into a screenplay for the big screen?
Oh, I think that's everyone's dream. I mean, yeah. If it's done well.
Right.
Because I do have author friends that it has not been done well for. I would adore that. I do know that right now it's not happening that much for historical because it's so expensive to make a historical piece.
Okay.
Although maybe Hamnet will change that.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I would adore that. Saoirse Ronan, Jesse Buckley, call me. I'm available.
Well, I know they're big listeners. They're probably tuning in right now. Yeah. So you also write strong female characters. That's kind of what you're known for. Who are they based on?
Well, I think it comes from myself, honestly. With Alice, who is the main character in Bright O'Byrne, the first so-called witch in Ireland. The book was really fueled by rage and like this huge anger. And I've always been someone who like would say that I'm not an angry person. I would say that, oh, I don't get angry. And I think that had just like built up inside me for so long that I like needed to release it. Huh. And actually I think like getting emotions out on a page, especially maybe an emotion like anger, is quite like, is a constructive use of it.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
We have to do a very short break. My guest is Molly Aitken. She is the author behind such great books as Bright Eye Burn and The Island Child. We'll have a few more minutes with Molly when we return. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Great to have you with me on this Thursday night. It is the Christmas Eve of weeknights, folks. Let's go. Let's effing go. I would say the full F word, like my guest, Molly, who swears like a sailor and has had to control herself because she's on live radio tonight. I really appreciate that. She is the author of such books as Bright I Burn from 2024 and The Island Child from 2020, an award-winning author who was based in Ireland and is joining us tonight from the UK, Molly Aitken. It is so great to have you here. How do you think it's going so far? Are you having fun?
I'm having so much fun. Okay. Thank you so much.
This is nice to be around a person who is truly Irish. I've been faking it my whole life as a half Irishman, but
well, I have a confession. I'm half Scottish.
Oh dear, that's trouble.
I know.
And you're and now you're in London, right? Or in England?
I know. Oh. They've all disowned me.
You can't make everybody happy, right?
No.
Can you tell me about that moment, Molly, when you decided, I'm going to do this. I can do this. I know I can be a writer. What if there was a moment like that? What was the moment and when was it?
Okay, I have two answers for you. When I was about 9, I wrote a novel, in air quotes, for a family member as a Christmas present. And it was about an orphan who finds out that Santa's her dad, obviously.
Oh, fun.
And that relative then gave me back that book in like bound as a real book. She got it printed by like this like beautiful printmaker, and it was a proper book. And that was the moment where I was like, oh my God, like something that I write can be turned into a real book.
Yeah.
And I still have it, and it's so bad.
Oh, come on, really?
It's cute. It's very cute. But yeah, we all have to start somewhere. but then I suppose as a teenager, I didn't write as much, or in my early 20s, I was having too much fun, I suppose. And then when I was like 24, I was like, I think I should start taking this seriously. And I did that thing, which I think a lot of writers do, and it's somewhat boring in a way, but I was like, if I want to do this, I have to commit and pay for it. And so I did an MFA in creative writing. And that was,
wow,
that opened the doors really. I needed that like structure and people telling me to write things every week in order to actually do it.
It does help, doesn't it, to be around other writers? You just get a motivation, or you get like infused with creativity, I find. And that always motivates me to want to sit down and write. Is it like that for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, now I have like a few trusted other writers who I will share with. And it's very motivating because I like try and get things really good.
Yeah.
Because they're also like such great writers that I'm like too embarrassed to share something bad with them. So it is very motivating.
That's so great. So you said you did something recently called Soho. Where is that? I had that right in front of me.
Soho Radio,
but that's not out yet. Can you tell us when we can see that, or where we can, and tell us what it is? Is it a podcast or a performance?
I didn't know what this was, but they invited me on. It's a radio. It's a very cool, hip radio show down in London.
Kind of like this one?
Yeah, absolutely. And like when I came in, I was like, I'm not supposed to be in this building. It's full of like very young, cool people. it was two artists, like painters, and myself and another writer just talking about our processes and also like how art is similar to writing, but then also how it's different. It was fascinating. The artists are so fascinating. And the way they work is really interesting. I was quite jealous because they can just like spend a day and then they're done.
They've
finished a thing.
It's so different for someone like you. So what is your process? Do you sit down every day for a certain amount of time? Do you write when you're inspired or in a certain area that you like to write physically? What's your process like?
I don't do it every day. And I almost feel guilty saying that because I think lots of people think that you should, but it just doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I, like what I do is not good when I write every day. But I will have like times where it's extremely intense.
Yeah.
Like say 3 months where I'm writing almost constantly.
Nice.
And then I'll take a break and do other jobs. And in terms of like where I write, basically anywhere. Yeah. I love, there's like a cemetery. I don't know if you have this in the US, but across Europe, there's like old graveyards that are like super old and beautiful and full of trees and like foxes and things. Mm. And maybe it suits me because I write historical fiction. And I was just telling you that like a ghost helped me write.
Hey, book. Whatever works, you know.
Yeah.
And we have graveyards here in America. They're just not as old, right?
Yeah, probably not. But yeah, so I go to this Victorian graveyard and I write there. And just like in my notebook. But in the past, like I used to live in the city of Manchester in the UK and I worked in advertising and I would like commute every day on this like tram and I would just write on my phone and like squash between businessmen.
And they have no idea that you're churning out your next novel. That is so great. Molly, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been great getting to know you. You'll have to come back when you have this other thing that's really cool that you can't talk about, you told me earlier. So when you find out something about that, come back and please tell us all about it. And it was just great getting to know you.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Bye. All right. That's Molly Aitken, author. Check out her stuff. Just Google her, folks. That's what I did. And all of her works come up and she's outstanding on social media. So give her a follow. I'd like to thank my other guest, Hannah Lopez, who made the popcorn pick of the week. Ryan Albers, thank you for all your texts and calls. On behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad, I'm Pete Schwabe saying good night, Wisconsin, and stay warm. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is Nightlight. Great to have you with me on this Friday night. The band Toto was formed in 1977 and is still together. They've released 14 studio albums and have sold over 50 million records, and they are winners of multiple Grammy Awards over that stretch. Toto songs have been streamed over 1 billion times, and you can see this iconic band live in Milwaukee next month. Joining me now, a Nightlight first, and it is my pleasure to welcome lead singer of the band, Joseph Williams. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, Pete. Thanks for having me tonight.
Hey, this is a thrill. I've gotten a lot of joy out of your music over the course of my life, and it's been it's just great to listen to. I'm a huge fan, and I could not be more thrilled that you're here.
Oh, great. Well, I appreciate that. It's good, nice to be with you.
Now, I'm hoping that when you roll into Wisconsin in mid-February, it is much warmer than it is right now, but I cannot make any promises, so you might want to rethink that if it's not too late.
Yeah, we're preparing. We're getting mentally prepared. You know, coming from California, but we're really looking forward to it. We're looking forward to these theaters, and the setting is more intimate with amazing sound. Come in, get warm, hang out with us for a couple hours. It'll be great.
There is no better way to beat the cold, frankly, than going to see a great band inside, like you just said, where it's toasty and warm and filled with song. It's February 18th in Milwaukee at the beautiful Riverside Theater. Toto will take the stage. Have you guys been to Wisconsin? I assume you have at some point, but have you been here recently, Joseph?
I'm not sure if we were there. I think we came through in the summer, if I'm not mistaken. I've been up there a bunch. It's been a while since we've played a theater there, so I'm really looking forward to this. I know this theater sounds great, too.
Yeah, I want to say I saw you guys back in like the late 80s, maybe? It's Summerfest in Milwaukee, but that was an outdoor venue. I could be wrong, but such a fun band. How do you like touring, Joseph? Is it fun for you to get out and perform live, or do you prefer working in a studio? I imagine touring has its upside, but it can be exhausting as well.
It is. It's not the most glamorous thing that people may imagine, but it's still great. I mean, it's the greatest gig in the world. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to be a performer. I wanted to be a, you know, stage performer, whether it was plays or rock and roll or whatever. Obviously, fantasized about being a rock and roll singer, and so I love doing the shows. I love performing live. You know, the travel sometimes and the schedule can get a little bit tedious, and the key is to just, you know, as I'm sure people have told you before, just taking care of yourself, trying to keep healthy and get enough rest and everything so that you can, you know, give 100%+ on the shows when you're out there. And it's the best 2 hours of the day. You know, it really, really is.
That's great. There are so many great bands that came out of the 70s. How has Toto been able to stay together all these years? It's pretty remarkable.
It is remarkable. I mean, listen, the original members who started this thing in 77, obviously, people have changed, and we unfortunately have lost a couple of brothers who were in the band over the years and stuff, but the concept has never really changed, and that basically is, you know, a band of professional working musicians who are like at the top of their game and really the best in their field. It started that way and it still is that way. Everybody that's in this group is a standalone artist, an incredible player and an incredible singer, producers all. And, you know, that's sort of the whole idea of the thing to begin with. So keeping that going has been important. Of course, we got Steve Lukather with us, who's you can't really do it without him. He was at the first rehearsal and he'll be coming with us on this tour too. So he's been at it the whole time. I've been around for, you know, if you add it all up, over 20 years. And everybody else in the band, they all have to qualify. They all got to be, you know, as top notch as the guys who started this whole thing. So it's definitely in keeping with what the original concept was. And you're going to hear the tunes the way they were meant to be played by guys who play them just like the first dudes that did.
That's got to be the hardest thing, I would imagine. Like in the concerts I've seen, and I like a lot of the bands from that era and Springsteen, and is how do you do that every night? Like, I know you take your craft seriously and your artists as well, but what motivates you every night to do the best show you can possibly do? Is it because there's people that might be seeing you for the first time? Do you just love it that much? How do you find the motivation?
Well, I do love it that much. I mean, I'm just one of those creatures, you know. For me, and most musicians will probably tell you this, we don't stop, we just drop. You know, that's just how it is to be a musician. You just keep going until you can't do it anymore. But, I mean, to be honest with you, like when I get out there, the crowd, the audience, that motivates me. And knowing that I'm going to be out there with the crowd and, you know, beforehand gets us all sort of up and raring to go, to do these shows. And it's always fun and it's always a little bit different every day, which is what's great about it. We don't have any computerized this or that or bells and whistles. You're what you're hearing, what you're watching is every note being played on these instruments live and for real. And there's a sort of a raw thing about that, you know, warts and all, as they say.
Yeah.
And, the audience just, you know, gives you this great feedback and you can't help but just want to do well for them. That's kind of the way I feel about it.
You mentioned Steve Lukather. You guys, at least in my research or what I Googled yesterday, you guys have been friends since you've been teenagers. Is that true? And does that help keep the band together?
Well, it keeps us together. I mean, Luke's my closest friend. I mean, he really is. And we've gotten even more, you know, tighter over the years, especially, in the 20 teens and through COVID and then coming back after that and just keeping it together. And we work really well together. We complement each other. Personalities don't clash. We've never had that issue in our relationship, which has been great after all these years. We all knew who Luke was when I was a teenager. I think I was in junior high or middle school, as they say now. And he was, finishing up his high school years and stuff, but we all knew who he was. He was like a superstar among the kids, the musicians that we knew as kids that were playing at other people's schools and everything. So everybody followed him. He did a band. He was in a band for a short period of time with my older brother Mark, who's a drummer. And I think that's how I came into contact with him the first time. Always followed him, followed his career. The Page family was friends with my dad. His dad was a colleague of my dad's back in the 60s, even. And the Porcaro's father had played for my father in the orchestra on a couple of films that he did. So we were acquainted there. And so that by the time they asked me to come in, it was basically just asking a friend to come over and hang out.
That is so great. Toto is playing in Milwaukee February 18th at the beautiful Riverside Theater. And joining me now on the phone for a few minutes is lead singer Joseph Williams. Joseph, you're also a composer, and you've scored films, and you're Emmy nominated. Talk a little bit, if you would, about the differences between touring with Toto and just kind of being locked in a room and thinking of scores and lyrics and all that kind of stuff. How is that different? And is it a nice diversion from your day job, I suppose?
I suppose. I mean, my first love is performance. It always was, you know, since I was a kid. I obviously grew up in a household with a composer who was, you know, constantly working and everything. So I watched sort of how he did his craft. I certainly was never able to do it the way he did, the old school way, with, you know, pen and paper and a candle is basically all he needs to write his music. You know, I'm a little more modern. I had used some computerized help and stuff, but knew how to record musicians and all of that. It's a very different animal than being a performer or you know, going out on the road. You are sort of you know, spending 8, 10, sometimes 12 hours in a day trying to make sure that you write enough minutes so that you're going to be on time with your final product for the TV show or for the film or whatever you're working on. You're also writing, to accompany the vision of other people. So it's not quite as perhaps writing songs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For an album or something like that. You're working for somebody else, and in the setting of a film production or TV production stuff, there's lots of opinions. There's producers, there's directors, there's network guys, there's, you know, a lot of opinions. You're making changes. You have to accommodate the people that have hired you to do the work, so it takes a great amount of patience. And some weeks you get like a lot of minutes of music, and you know, you've got basically the same amount of time to do it. So sometimes you're stuck in there making sure that you can get it all done and get it recorded and get it delivered. So it's stressful in that way. It can be, but
yeah,
incredibly rewarding. And I obviously got a lot of help and tips from my father in terms of how to do it. He didn't really do anything to sort of make any jobs happen for me other than the times that I've worked for him. But but he was definitely there for me on the other end of the phone to walk me through this or that, or how to deal with a producer, or you know, when to say okay and when to say no, and all of that kind of stuff. The challenges of working with other artists, you know, trying to accommodate them with their vision.
You're talking about, of course, your father, John Williams, probably the most famous movie score composer in the history of Hollywood. That's got to be intimidating, maybe, as a son, but also encourage. Like, did he encourage you with rock and roll music? Was he, you know, he's so accomplished. Was he supportive when you started playing a different style of music?
Well, yes. I mean, always supportive. I mean, I think probably in the back of his mind, he at one point wished I was a lawyer or something like that, or a doctor. But he knew that I was destined for music. I mean, I was born into a family of two musical parents, both working. You know, my mother was a singer and a performer, and my father was constantly working. I'm the third child of three, so when I came home, it was all already going on, so almost like my first language. And so it was a foregone conclusion, and always, you know, tremendously supportive.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's going on the road and touring or sitting at home scoring or whatever, he's always just been a great encouragement, give a lot of great encouragement, that kind of thing. And now, you know, he's 94 years old and he's still working. He's still sharp as a tack, and he's finishing up the last few bits on this Spielberg film that's coming out this summer called Disclosure Day, which looks really good. And yeah, he's still at it and still kicking. I think he's in Boston right now, attending a performance of his latest piano concerto. So he's a nut. He's amazing. So yeah, no, he's always been behind me every step of the way.
That's so great. Joseph Williams is my guest, the lead singer of Toto. They are playing Milwaukee at the Riverside Theater February 18th. We'll be back after this short break with more from Toto frontman Joseph Williams. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight. It's not in the way you've been treating my friends. It's not in the way that you stay to the end. It's not in the way you look or the things that you say that you do. For the line,
love isn't always on. You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet.
Welcome back. I'm Pete Schwabba. This is Nightlight. My guest is Joseph William. He is the lead singer of the legendary band Toto, who is playing Milwaukee February 18th at the beautiful Riverside Theater. He joins us here on Nightlight for the first time. And for what it's worth, my friend Pat Francis, who does a podcast called Rock Solid, which you've been on before, said he saw Toto last year and you guys just absolutely still rock. So everybody should go see the show on February 18th. Last thing before we let you go, Joseph, what is your favorite Toto song to sing, and what do people respond to the most in the crowd when you guys start playing a tune?
Well, there's a lot of songs I love to do. It's especially fun to do stuff that we haven't done or haven't done in a long, long time. It's fun to sort of make that order and pick those songs for the set list and stuff. But to be really totally, I'm being completely honest with you, my favorite thing to do in the show is to do Africa. And you know, it's the way the audience responds, it's so inspiring. You know, sometimes they're singing it so loud that you can't even hear us.
Wow.
And you know, singing, shouting out that chorus is feels amazing. As people know who love the song, it's just one of those choruses that sticks with you and has a sort of an emotional quality. And it's a blast to do every single night. I never get tired of it.
That's so great to hear that. I remember that came out in the early 80s. I loved it so much, and then it became part of my workout mix like in the 90s, and such a great song on so many levels. Last thing before we let you go, are you binge watching anything on TV? Let's say you're done composing, you're done touring, you get to your hotel room. What is Joseph Williams watching on TV?
Well, I watch lots of stuff. I mean, I just finished the season of Landman. That's a cool show.
Yeah.
I'm also a big fan of Jeremy Renner. He's got the show, the Mayor of Kingstown. It's a great, great show. There's so many great great things out there these days. The production values that they're doing with these limited series are great and really appeal to me. And then I go back and rewatch stuff that I love. I've watched probably Breaking Bad the seasons
yeah.
Probably a couple of times easy. So I'm all over the place. But like, I just finished the season of Landman, which is Billy Bob Thornton, who's a fave of mine,
yeah.
And he's great. It's a great show.
Listen, buddy, thank you so much. Have a great time in Milwaukee. Stay warm, knock 'em dead. And I really, truly appreciate your time tonight. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and love your music. Keep up the great work.
I appreciate it, Pete. And I thank you for having me. And please come out and hang out with us for a couple hours. You'll have a great time.
Outstanding. I appreciate that. Thanks so much, Joseph. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. That's Joseph Williams from Toto, the lead singer. They are playing Milwaukee at the Riverside Theater February 18th, an outstanding show. I saw them, I think, at Summerfest years ago, and just love their music. So check that out. Boy, that was fun, Con.
That was great.
You know, there's just certain bands that you've listened to your whole life, and they're famously covered by others because they're so influential. And that's just, that's what Toto is. And they're unbelievable. When a band stays together that long, and there aren't many. you know, U2, Springsteen and the E Street Band. I guess you could say the Eagles. And there are different derivations of these bands and members come and go. But it's so great that they are still touring and they are an absolute blast to listen to.
Yeah. So. I didn't know his dad was John
Williams. About that?
That's cool.
You got a legend breathing down your neck artistically. That's but he's handled it well.
Yeah, I mean, Toto's a great band, so.
They're an outstanding band, and he's done his own thing, too. He's an Emmy-nominated composer, so his dad rubbed off on him definitely the right way. So.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.